Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. It's a Monday. We just got back from, was that the payday weekend? Oh yeah, it was one of those dangerous intersections. No, that was the previous one. So this is the second week of September and, you know, the...
Slow going.
Oh yeah, really slow.
Super slow.
Really slow. Just
we've got to fake it to make it.
Yeah, just hang in there. There's a bright Tuesday at the end of this tunnel.
Of this Monday.
There's a bright Tuesday at the end of this. All right. So, speaking of, well, money is challenging to basically manage. One thing I've come to learn. You can make the plans, but as soon as the money comes, the plans go out through the window. Then you start, in your words, gallivanting from one shopping mall to another. Then you find out that
we're into multiple unplanned for events.
Oh yeah,
that usually incorporate, you know.
Yeah,
you opening up your wallet.
All of a sudden, I'm throwing stuff in my trolley without looking at the price. But, because in the middle of the month, the order is price, expiry date, and then price again.
Yeah.
And then price again, and price again, then.
And then you start, doing opportunity costs.
First of all,
do I need you or do I need you?
You know, before you get there.
Do I want you or do I need you?
Before you get there, you look around and make sure there are no cameras positioned where you are, reduce the phone's brightness, and then do the calculations. I'm not talking from experience, obviously, but.
Reducing phone brightness. Just open up the calculator.
I know. Mula. Yeah. One of my all-time favorite artists, Ntombi, the South African lady. I'm not sure if she's still alive though, because one of those old school songs that that goes like, "Money is not a problem, but the problem is how to use it." That is true. Although today is, we are going to talk about money, albeit somewhat in a whole different way, you know, on a two regions world, that is the Caribbean and the African, you know, the African Union community, that had an event on the yesterday. This was yesterday, on the 7th of September, where they, now for those of you that have been living under a rock, first of all, welcome away or out of that rock. The AU theme for this year heavily emphasizes joint reparation negotiations. Now, so we decide now this Sunday, the Caribbean countries and the African, African Union representative basically came together and said, this is a part of our history that we, that we have in common, both the Caribbeans and Africans. And we're like, okay, now, how about we create this joint venture where we are, where we are negotiating against former colonial powers on reparations. And then, as you can imagine, a bunch of speeches were given, and those speeches are, for the most part, what we are going to be talking about, until the end of our show for today.
Well, the guy that came from was it the UN General Assembly, on behalf of Antonio Guterres?
Oh, yeah.
The gentleman, the envoy, special envoy. Yeah, it was him that said the Rastafarian movement in the Caribbean wants closer ties to the African brethren. I don't know, guys. This was from a religious perspective that I really tried to understand. How does that factor into, a truly economic scenario? But you know what? We start off on a lighter foot to introduce the subject matter, because there were five speakers basically. Also once again, not to laugh at the very obvious mistake that was made on the Angolan president's name. The master of ceremonies. Yeah. I had to stop myself from, and she's African herself.
I know.
I just don't know how she got to that pronunciation. Look, she could say Lorenzo, ne, but it's the João. The João was the challenge.
I thought it was just me.
I had to listen 5 times to understand
what she's talking about.
Whose name is this? And then you hear Lorenzo at the end, but
they're like, oh,
but what's the first part? But yeah, obviously not to throw shade, guys. After I actually threw shade,
uh-huh,
a whole bucket full of it. The talking point that stems from the particular second, Africa CARICOM, summit, which took place yesterday. It supposedly was a 2-day event, Helmut. It started, it seems, on Saturday. And the actual, the actual summit itself that we, that you and I are basing our talk off, actually was only this 1-day event that we saw yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't know ultimately what this is based upon, dear listeners, this was in preparation. It actually is a brainchild of, the previous, AU chairperson, that being, Uhuru Kenyatta, who in 2022, introduced the aspect in terms of that the broader diaspora, African diaspora, has to, technically, we have to build closer ties with each other. Mm-hmm. So I'm setting the scene, dear listeners, so you understand why the Caribbean community and the AU community had this, the second summit yesterday. So the African diaspora, component or dimension is now being greatly explored in terms of developing closer ties between various territories that have African diaspora. So we're talking about South America, we're talking about the Caribbean, we're talking about, obviously, Africa is in the mix there. There's obviously also other particular territories, like in Europe itself, in order for closer, you know, closer relations to exist from that perspective. So it's one of the reasons, Ahmed, which I keep referencing, that in an African perspective, we work backwards to front. So we first develop the friendship discussions before we start moving things to a trade-related scenario.
Mm-hmm.
But in this diaspora discussion, which is obviously interlinked to the theme that the AU has selected.
AU say, 2025 theme.
Yeah, the 2025 theme. The Caribbean community actually subscribes to the same thing as well. Because in their particular, it's not to say founding document, but which also lays the scene for us in this discussion, they also aspire, I'll use the word aspire, they also aspire to achieve the same goal. Same goal being, because Mia Motley, the Prime Minister of, is it Trinidad and Tobago, she went most last year and at the, what was the thing's name? There's a summit that always takes place just before the UN General Assembly. Oh, yeah. Let me build the jigsaw puzzle for you. So at the end, so 10 days from now, make it 12 days from now. Yeah, make it 12 days from now, Helmut, is going to be the United Nations General Assembly 80. General Assembly 80.
Oh.
So the General Assembly is going to be 80 years old since the Second World War, since 1945. Then the problematic scenario from that is obviously you can already see that the Caribbean community and the AU community, the African community, are now already telling each other, we're now signaling to each other, hey, listen, because one of the speeches, I think it's the lady from the Prime Minister from St. Kitts and Nevis, who was the CARICOM chairperson, who spoke first, the dignitary that spoke first. She referenced, obviously, the reforms to the United Nations and the multilateral organizations like the IMF and World Bank. She referenced that particular talking point already. At the UN General Assembly 80, now I've already went and looked at what menu they've got planned for 22 to 30 September.
Is that the one that's being shipped to Switzerland?
Is it being shipped to Switzerland? Okay, it didn't say yet. I didn't check on the website where the address is.
You're going to love that part, but go on.
Yeah. So now we know that it's because of Donald Trump's situations and people don't want issues with ICE. That's why. That's why.
South Korea is already caught in that crossfire, but go on.
Yeah. So, number three on the menu of the discussions between 22 September to 30 September is sustainable financing, which you and I have already done as well.
Mm-hmm.
So sustainable financing will be there. And we're already looking at a discussion where AU and the Caribbean community are already highlighting before we get to the 80th session of the General Assembly.
Yeah.
Now, before the General Assembly engagement, there's China plus the 70 plus China. So if you don't know what the 70 plus China are, dear listeners, it's technically the Global South, and they meet in, it's a UN-backed sub-agency. It's a UN sub-agency, technically, and they meet before the General Assembly engagement. So you might sometimes see our international relations minister attends that summit before meeting up with our head of states at the General Assembly itself. Every year. Last year it was somewhere else. The year before that was in Cuba, Havana, Cuba. And obviously, you know, our international relations minister at the time had to fly like that and then meet up with President Geingob in New York. And then obviously the other particular one of last year of 2024, that was now obviously we were planning the Pact of the Future or the Summit of the Future discussion alongside Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our international relations minister was not present at the 70 plus China engagement. But there was a representative of Namibia there, because everyone needed to be in New York for the launch of the Summit of the Future and the Pact of the Future.
Yeah.
Now, the Pact of the Future, like you and I have also highlighted, is just a recommitment to stay true to the SDGs, you know, stay on course for the SDGs. The Summit of the Future or the Pact of the Future does not deviate from the SDG commitments. It's just stick to this particular engagement, which is an agreement. Stick to the agreement. A pact is an agreement.
Yeah.
In order to achieve the SDGs. That's all it is. So you're still in the SDG framework. It's just now you need an additional agreement to say, please stay in the car. Don't walk on the pavement, to, you know, literally be on course for the SDGs. Because on a pavement, you can deviate in multiple directions. If you're on the same road, if you're in the car, you stay on one road, which takes you to one destination. So, I know, I had to also add in that particular scenario. Branching downwards to what's going to happen, or what happened now yesterday. So we had five speakers. Everyone technically sitting there with copycat, what you call it, things, speeches.
You know,
except was now for the Rastafari connection.
Homeboy type of homeworks going on there.
Yeah, except was now for the Rastafari religious comment that came out, and I was like frowning the whole time at the video going like, what? And then, if only the Rastafari knew that Africa is split literally into two dimensions. It's either conservative Muslim or conservative Christian. Yeah, there's a little gray area there for liberal religious people, you know, somewhere yeah. there. But in many cases, the slim...
Yeah, the two major pieces, yeah.
Yeah, the line gets even slimmer when it comes to Rastafarianism there, somewhere there.
Really slim.
Because even the Ethiopians will tell you, sorry. We're either Muslim or we are Coptic Christian. So,
yeah.
Or we are Judaic, you know, because they are also Ethiopian Jews.
Yeah.
That's as far as you can go. So the Rastafari connection in terms of pulling a line there from a Caribbean community was like, you stop with the Bob Marley stuff first.
That would have made an excellent speech.
stop with the Bob Marley references. Let's just stop there. So it then lays the groundwork because, as I mentioned, everyone technically had the same speeches. Now, here's where things, and I know you're going to mention another interesting talking point, which is technically in reference to conflict scenarios. The major component here has been, Helmut, that yes, you can see the notable absences, absenteeism or absentees at this particular engagement of yesterday. Because obviously our president wasn't there. Our president is, you know, doing her particular, exercise. I almost said optic exercise, but that would have sort of like made it sound bad. But it is optics. It is optics. It is a lot of public relations, mm-hmm. what the president is doing or has been doing now for the past month and a half, 2 months. It is a lot of public relations. I know. I'm actually feeling a little bit, you know, sorry for our president being on the road for so long. At least she's in Namibia, touring Namibia, seeing Namibians, meeting mm-hmm. Namibians, engaging with Namibians. But Helmut, how do you walk out of one engagement here and you walk into another one over there? I would have said, I want to go sleep. I want to kick up my shoes, rest a little bit.
You are the president. You don't need to sleep.
I know.
You can only imagine how straining it can be.
I mean, even Barack Obama said after he lost the, you know, after he stepped off down after two terms, he said it's the first time he's going to be sleeping properly after 10 years.
10 years of no sleep.
Well, of, you know, inconsistent sleeping.
Anything can pop up like at any time.
Yeah. And he also had to travel a lot. He's the only president of the American presidents that actually made that comment, because he was asked after a step, you know, handing over to Donald Trump in the Donald Trump's first term, you know, Mr. President, what are you going to do? And he said, it's going to be the first time I'm going to be sleeping properly. So, we can obviously see this has now been month six-ish of President Nandi Ndaitwah's particular term. Obviously, like I said,
you know, just, you know,
she has to
depart. 4 years and 6 months to go.
No, but she has to depart next week for the UN General Assembly, which is going to be her maiden participation as a head of state in, you know, like you said, Musnad, this is now the session that had been moved to Switzerland, the most neutral country on the planet. You know, why didn't they put the whole UN framework in Switzerland?
No.
Why was it based in New York?
You know, that's a good question, but I never
asked. Because it's been the problem since the Ukraine conflict. Everyone was asking, are the Americans going to arrest Putin if he shows up? And then Putin just says, okay, I'll make it easy for you. I won't show up.
Mm-hmm. After all, it's just
But you're supposed to get a special clearance from the immigration guys when the UN General Assembly happens. And, mm-hmm. and Putin is a Security Council member.
Yep.
So anyway, but obviously, as we've got to understand, that was the American rhetoric of the day, because they were rattling, what you call it, they were rattling their sabers at the prospect of Putin just flying over into New York,
mm-hmm.
because if you're a Security Council member, there is no law on this planet unless you want to throw the whole world into a third world war, that you can touch the head of state of a UN Security Council member.
Well, first of all, it's not just that. Forget the head of state. When was that? Was that the 2014s or 2015s?
Mm.
When the ICC, or more like, they made it public that they were making plans to look into the possible war crimes committed by US soldiers in Iraq.
In Trump's first term.
They passed the Hague Invasions Act. Like, look, that piece of legislation is one that...
Where the King of the Netherlands lives in. The King of the Netherlands lives in the city of The Hague.
Not just that. The Netherlands is a member of NATO.
Yeah.
Being threatened by a fellow NATO member state.
Yeah.
Now, what you're looking at here, that piece of legislation showed me that international law for the most part is just for small countries that don't have the military muscles to flex. Because if you have the muscles, you can just go around breaking the law like you want. Now, that's actually the painful, I think that's the actually painful part of every discussion relating to ending of military conflicts. Because when you send a message like that, what do you think any country is going to do?
Mm.
They're going to start arming themselves to the teeth, because they know that the only language that's understood on a larger scale globally is military muscles. So the rest is very secondary.
You have to. I did a talk four Sundays back on my Sunday morning take about what does it really mean when you hear the statement rules-based order.
Oh. Might is right.
You have to look up that explainer hell. Because Ursula von der Leyen used it when the EU signed that particular engagement back in July, end of July, when she was in China to meet with Xi Jinping, when the EU delegation and commission were in China to meet with their Chinese counterparts. And she met with Xi Jinping. And then she gave a speech right after meeting Xi Jinping,
mm-hmm.
which had that statement in, we must subscribe or we must adhere to a rules-based order. Do you know what's the worst part of that statement, Helmut? The rules-based order system is technically still, it is the contentious point that we, the Africans, are actually highlighting. Meaning, it's the contentious point where we, the Africans, are saying, we want an African voice on the Security Council. And then everyone is saying, well, you can't give it to any single African country because there are governance issues in every single African country. You can't give it to the AU because you don't know for who the AU represents. Because we had the AU guys showing up at the Italy-Africa summit of last year.
Mm-hmm.
Remember? And the AU chairperson and the AU commission head, which was obviously, was it Moussa Faki or was it the other guy? Who was sitting right next to William Ruto. The guy that you love quoting that said, please don't speak hot air. Put some action into your words.
That was Moussa Faki, wasn't it Macky Sall?
It was Macky Sall, right? It was Macky Sall. And if you go to Macky Sall or even Moussa Faki's countries and you go look at the governance issues in their countries, then you find scenarios where you've got presidents, was it Moussa Faki or Macky Sall's country? One of the two, mm-hmm. where they've got the 34-year-old president.
That's Senegal. That's, Macky Sall.
Macky Sall, ne? Where he suspended the whole parliament.
Because
Macky Sall's party was the majority had the majority seats. But, this 34-year-old president, who's now 35, does not have the majority. He won the presidency, but his party didn't win the majority in the upper house. And the moment he tries to push through or force through reforms in terms of economic reforms in his country, Macky Sall's guys went and said, okay, now we'll hold your whole...
So they're basically voting against each other just for the heck of it.
No, they're literally holding the whole reformation process
hostage.
And he decides to enact literally doing the authoritarian thing that makes us look bad as Africans. He goes and does the one authoritarian thing just because people don't agree with him. What did he think? What did he think politics was? And what the worst part about politics now is that there's a lot of compromises that take place. There's a lot of compromises that take place. You will hear a lot of barking on the left-hand side. And then you realize you see them at the same gala dinner, eating from the same buffet, sitting at the same table,
hang on a second,
having the same conversation. And you're like, but you said something last week.
Nah, don't fall for that.
So yeah, so the governance issues is Africa's biggest issue. Now, I don't know which makes us look a little bit worse, because we're now asking in terms of what the AU says, this particular Africa CARICOM summit of yesterday is to bring African nations, Caribbean states, and the global African diaspora to strengthen unity, deepen integration, and jointly pursue reparations and reparatory justice through a comprehensive transcontinental partnership framework under a theme. So now this Africa CARICOM engagement now has a theme on top of our theme. You just throw in the word transcontinental there.
We're making a sandwich out of it.
What is with us Africans and themes?
Well, at least there's something we're good at, but before that, commercial break.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. It's just a minute past the hour of five. You're still listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight here on Eagle FM.
So, yeah, just before...
Themes.
Yeah, just on the backside of the theme statement discussion, guys, I've now come to the biggest sort of like light bulb moment. It seems that all the organizers, meaning these multilateral agencies and platforms, they're like glorified advertising consultants. You would expect them to be policy directors and policy gurus. I mean, how do you put transcontinental in there, Helmut? The Caribbean is not a continent.
You're missing something here. All you just have to do is pick any gathering.
Yeah.
And then look at the theme. Because a theme is a guarantee.
Yeah.
And then you just sit and then watch, just sit and then watch or listen or read through, because they, they mostly produce like PDF versions of all their speeches.
Yeah.
Watch through or read through. Just take a peek of, of all the speeches that are given. And then you pick the key points, because they're going to have collating points and all that you are going to find in a bunch of speeches, most of which are developmental related, most of which are, throw in safety and security, finance is a very big part of it.
Yeah.
Then
inequality.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Inequality, and then cross border travel, flexibility is like visa free, visa on arrival type of discussions.
Yeah. And then we don't want to fly to each other's countries. We don't want to send money to each other.
Boy, have we been talking about those things like since forever.
Yeah.
And then you sit and ask, let's look at the implementation part of things.
Mm.
How are we doing in that department?
Where are we with implementation?
Short answer, no way. Now, here's the thing. As we speak, personally, I just find it very fascinating that we are talking about, we are talking about bringing everyone together for the betterment, economically for the most part, of not just Africans on the African continent, but also those ones in diaspora. Now, then you start looking at how we are doing cooperation wise. Lucky for you and I, we have, there's a perfect example that was set this year by Kinshasa and Kigali.
Mm.
Yeah. They were invited into Angola to sit down and discuss the Eastern DRC problem out.
Yeah, in December last year.
And boy, they were all playing tough guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the African Union takes place. Mm-hmm. The African Union summit at the beginning of the year in Addis Ababa.
Yeah.
They're all playing tough guy. All of a sudden, someone wants to use Zoom.
No, the one that refuses to show up and doesn't want to be in the same room.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Now, my favorite part is the Qatari said, oh yeah, come here. They both hopped on their planes. Now,
and they sat in the same room.
Have you seen how small that table is? Now, at this point,
have you seen how small the space between them was? Even
now, at this point, I can't help but ask myself one question. I'm like, okay, we guys, I can't keep defending us if we keep, if we keep doing things like this.
Yeah.
Now, the next thing you know, there's this seemingly fast track part of, of peace agreements.
Mm.
That finally shifts from the Middle East all the way to Washington.
Mm. Mm.
And then, a bunch of representatives, both countries and representatives, a bunch of agreements are signed. And
in
then,
Washington.
In Washington.
Was it June or July?
I think it was somewhere June or July.
Then. Yeah.
So a bunch of these agreements are signed. And then just shortly after that, now at this point, when those agreements were signed, I couldn't help but think, you know that whole silencing of the guns thing? Washington, how about we just sit with the Qatari? Like, if I was running...
Or we use the Qataris as mediators.
Mediators.
In every conflict.
African leaders, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah, to basically sit down and ask ourselves one question. Why is that we don't want to sit at, we don't want to sit around the table? If we don't want to sit around the table and solve our own problems, why do we have the African Union? We may as well just dissolve that thing, and every time there's a dispute, we go to Qatar.
And then we say we put the AU headquarters.
Or, throw it in Doha.
Yeah, we would now be the Doha African collective, and we position it there in the Middle East.
Throw it in the Middle East.
Because for some reason we like more.
Oh, Washington.
We like more sand.
We already have sand. All you just have to do is
go to Swakop. That's why I keep saying some of these Namibians that love going to Dubai. And I said, how can you fly from one sand-infested place to a place that has just more sand, but it's the same sand? How can you go from sand to sand?
Well, they have tall buildings
that reflect in the sun, in that sand sunlight.
Yeah, plus instead of good morning, they say assalamu alaikum.
Yeah. All right, Fair enough.
When I look at the way that we basically solve problems, when my Sunday show started, I remember sitting here looking at the South African, Center for Security Studies.
Mm. Oh, the ISS.
Now, those guys, they basically looked, the increase in foreign military bases on the African continent, can bring up a lot of sovereignty and security issues. Now, this is a concern acknowledged by the African Union.
Mm.
Now, you're just looking at it partially, like the countries that allow the foreign military installations in the countries. Why do they do that? You're not asking this question to criticize. You just want to know, what interest are they drawing out of it?
Mm.
These pieces of land, for the most part, are leased, and it's a multi-million dollar business opportunity.
Mm.
So,
and someone owns that piece of land.
Exactly. Does it constitute security threat?
Yes.
Yeah. A big one.
But someone wants to make money from it.
I totally understand that security threat?
Hmm.
Is because if you look at larger powers like, especially China, Russia, and the US, for example, they don't even want to use each other's tech equipments.
Hmm.
The Chinese, especially the Chinese and the Americans are the most savage at this.
Mm.
They want, especially, I think that was last year when the Chinese government made a proposal. I'm not sure if they implemented the proposal to stop using, at least in the public sector, which is the largest part of China,
mm.
in the public sector, to remove all, especially computers, foreign made computers.
Mm.
They just want everything that is that they are familiar with. Now, when you look at us, the security part here is a giant one. For one, we don't produce any of these equipments. We just procure.
We just spend money.
Uh-huh.
We don't make the computers. We don't make the computer programs.
Nope.
We don't make the, we don't even make the power banks.
Nope.
We don't even make the bullets nor the guns.
Nope.
That's just why I made that statement the other day, Helmut. Remember when we had the other particular sort of like, the one based upon about the SADC discussion? one of Namibia's pathways to achieving industrialization would be, for example, if NAMPO had its own direct procurement, meaning it procured directly its own cars, and it, okay, they do, guys. Let's not confuse facts here or sort of like misconstrue situations. It's just that their budget comes out of a broader ministerial budget, and then that ministry can tell NAMPO, you know what, guys, you guys wanted to service your buckies, right? Because that issue came up again, Helmut, about some police stations or, you know, not having a functioning vehicle, which is the same thing that came through from the report that we did the other day.
The Office of the Attorney General.
Yeah, the Attorney General. Auditor General.
Yeah, Auditor General. with the
Ministry of Fisheries. Fisheries guys who could not respond to things because, firstly, the fisheries observers, agents weren't there. Secondly, in many cases, they also didn't have the car or the cars to get there. So it's a very broad impacting scenario. Now, one of the quickest ways that Namibia can achieve its industrialization is, for example, if we had that Peugeot plant now, but it's not an assembly plant, which the Peugeot plant was. It would have been a Namibian made car, which was a Namibian branded car, which is free from any particular, you know, procurement issues like waiting for parts from South Africa because the car is like 10 years out of the procurement cycle.
Don't we have like to, you know, to deal with a bunch of, copyright papers to pull that off?
That's not what I'm saying. Yeah. But here's the thing, Amut. If a country that is so heavily, sanctioned like Iran.
Oh, yeah.
Has two car brands, state-owned car brands, two of them.
Despite the sanctions,
because they already have their own oil. So they decided, you know what, let's make the petrol for the two car brands. Now, if you make the petrol for your two car brands, that same car brand can make police vehicles for you, can make military vehicles for your army, can make aircraft for civilian and for your air force uses. So you can obviously see the local content participation becoming so pervasive, so wide, you generate your own research and development, you have your own prestige projects, because manufacturing is a prestige sector. The downside here is, specifically, when you hear examples like what you explained just now, and let's, for example, spitball with the idea, Hamud, that, because all this transcontinental moves and discussions there is in direct opposition to the EU, because it's the EU. Actually, it's one country. Actually, it's two, but it's actually one country. And that country is no longer part of the EU.
The UK.
Yeah. It's actually one country that all this discussion is based upon. The Spanish will quite clearly tell you, I don't have the money and we're in the EU, so you will have to ask the EU for the money. That's the downside. You can literally see the issue like 100 kilometers away. The scenario from this is, Helmut, the FOCAC, the Forum for China-Africa Cooperation.
Yeah.
Which you and I looked at it in last year. Remember that at the FOCAC, we read that statement, the one that cited specifically that no coercive measures must be introduced into multilateral or bilateral treaties so as to sort of like still maintain a competitive advantage. I'm just sort of like jogging your memory there a little bit.
Yeah, I remember that because the problem with that statement is very counter corporate world.
No, that statement is very anti-Samoa agreement.
Yeah.
Now remember, African countries and AU guys flew to FOCAC last year. Stood there smiling.
You know, going, for pictures.
Going ni hao, ni hao.
Nihao, seriously.
With either a non-alcoholic Heineken, Savannah, Vintook Original, or Vintook Lemon, let's cheers to connecting, to moments shared and good vibes, anytime, anywhere. Grab one of our great tasting non-alcoholic beers or ciders. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. The time is quarter past the hour of three. And if you just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And today's center of discussion is the fascinating, problem-solving strategies, plural, of the African continent. On the bright side, all our strategies from all the summits we have, we make sure they are themed to the best of our grammatic abilities of the English language. And now, when you look at the implementation part of things, then you begin to realize just how, in the words of the, you know, in the words of the Secretary, the United Nations Secretary General, every report then becomes one of a sobering reading.
Well, not this thing of yesterday. It was more like, okay, we're in phase one engagements. The reason why I say that, Amud, is because the sobering reading comes through from when we get invited to things like the folk act that I mentioned before the ad break.
To smile for pictures?
No, not just smile for pictures. We go say, yes, we are here. And then we get asked, you know, how's our relationship with some community, BRICS community members, and we say, no, it's top notch. And then we smile for the group picture. We go like, ni hao, and then everyone says, wohan hao, and we know wohan hao just means I'm very well, you know. Ni hao is to say, how are you? And wohan hao is to respond, I'm very well, thank you, or I'm very well. So then the greetings go, and then everyone is shaking hands and standing at the buffet, you know, having lovely, you know, cuisine. And Then you go get two guys like Dwight and Helmut, they go read a document that is like the declaration document of why we showed up. Now, the transcontinental part of things, Helmut, like I said, you obviously pointed to the principle of things.
Yeah.
But I pointed towards the non-transcontinental element of things because the Caribbean is not a continent. The Caribbean is a cluster of island nations, many of them of which are still part of which are still territories of the famed Pandora Box offshore discussions or Panama Papers, whichever one you wish to apply. Because a lot of them technically are still, what was the word that the lady from Nigeria said last week? She also studied law. She was also a practicing lawyer in Nigeria. She said, you know, tax havens is a bit of a strong label. I know any other person would have said tax haven because it's a jurisdiction out of the UK, but still under the UK jurisdiction areas. But it's just a hidden area. And then she says, no, the tax haven is a little bit of a strong label, you know, Dwight, you know, so.
You know why that's, you know, one of the reasons why I think she said that. Because if you look at this whole, you know, one of the ways that they pull off things like, there's a bunch of, money, illegal money moving activities that, you know, like the Panama Papers. Because technicalities is a very, you know, is a core foundation of it.
Mm.
Technicalities is a core foundation of it. Mm. Because, which is why I think, you know, I think when we are reading, one of the reasons why I'm so glad I ended up in this seat is because I basically been more like pushed to read beyond headlines.
Mm.
Because you know for a lot of us, when we consume the news, we just read it out of a newspaper and then take it on face value that is true. But the beautiful example of why that is a bad idea is is the EU. cutting off dependency from Russian oil. Now, here's the thing. Kazakhstan is a sovereign country.
Mm.
Yeah. And they are very, Kazakhstan is a sovereign country, not Russia. But they have a very good relationship with Russia.
Mm.
That's just one of those many countries. And so it's countries like Russia and India, for example. Now, for a lot of products that were bought directly by a lot of EU countries out of Russia directly before February of 2022.
Yeah.
For a lot of those products that were bought directly by a lot of EU countries, they stopped buying them. Not all of them. A lot of them, they stopped buying them. But you know what? Just all of a sudden, the very same product is being bought on a large scale by countries like Kazakhstan.
Mm.
And then you have a lot of EU countries that are buying the exact same product from who? Kazakhstan. Now, the thing is, if Kazakhstan doesn't produce the product, where are they buying it from?
Mm.
They're buying it from Russia.
Mm.
So when you look at it from that, you begin to see that all that's playing around with technicalities.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because and I think this is, this is where technicality is very important. Because, it's Russian oil. If it's in their, oil wells until they sell it.
Mm.
When they sell it, when any Russian company sells the oil to any country, take Kazakhstan or India, for example, as soon as the contract, according to the law of contract, the delivery is done,
mm.
it stops being Russian oil and starts being Kazakhstan's oil or India's oil.
Yeah.
At this point now, no one is going to point fingers at you for buying it.
Yeah, because the explainer that a lot of these, if I can call it activists, not advocates, love to make is, let's say I buy a cow from you, Hamel.
Mm-hmm.
We are two cattle farmers.
Yeah.
But there's a third party that has a grievance with me. And obviously, you don't know about this third party, but this third party is going to radio stations, to the media, saying, Dwight, he's a bad farmer, he does X, Y, Z, and he does so and so and so. But now the third party then tries to influence people that I buy products from,
mm-hmm.
and people that I buy product that I sell products to.
Yeah.
Now the downside is that many of these activists don't understand is
no.
They want to stop me from selling, let's say, cattle, let's say to a Meatco or to a abattoir or a meat processing plant. And then they want to go influence that specific client by saying, don't buy Dwight's cattle because, Dwight doesn't believe in human rights. But my constitution on human rights is different from the constitution on human rights that the activist, the third party, understands. Because I have my own legal,
my own legal framework.
My own laws, my own cultures, my own, perspectives, my own language, because I don't teach English in my schools. I'm technically now explaining China and Russia to you.
And India.
No, India is the world's largest English speaking country, bruh.
Huh?
India.
Yeah.
It's the world's largest English speaking country.
I knew they teach English, which is why a lot of, a lot of them speak English, which is why they for the most part, they dominate the tech industry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even in English speaking countries, but the largest or the second largest.
Do you think the Chinese actively teach English in
their
schools?
No, when it comes to China.
Yeah. In their schools. No, you get English after classes.
But come to think of it, it makes a lot of sense because, a lot of European countries use their respective languages as their official languages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you look at that scenario that I'm highlighting there to you, so you go to, obviously India has its own legal, scenario, but if you go look at a discussion where to influence the trade discussion between multiple countries, many people forget that if you walk to the shop and you've got an issue with a milk production company, you can have all the politics associated to that milk production company. But the first thing that any customer will tell you who wants a 2-liter bottle of milk is, the moment they paid for that bottle. Sorry, guys, for that overpronounced, that overemphasis on the pay, on the P in paid. The moment they paid, Helmut, that customer will tell you, this is my milk.
Yep, you have a receipt as a proof that it's yours and you
because,
pay for it.
Because you and I, we did commercial law. The commercial law, the realm of a transaction or the contract of purchase and sale states you must identify the issue. They call it the essentials. Or what is the Latin word they use? Essentialia.
Yeah, essentialia. Basically essentials, yeah.
Yeah, the essentials. Identify the essentials of this contract, meaning identify the product, identify the price, and identify the mode of delivery or when delivery has to take place, meaning exchange. Because just to deliver the thing doesn't actually mean that the person can exact ownership over it.
Yeah.
It also means in which formats delivery occur. Because if it's a house, you obviously give symbolic delivery, which is a key. If it's a cow, it's obviously you pointing to the person said, there's your cow. If it's, what's the other thing's name? Which is also, they get long, delivery by long hand and delivery by short hand. Those two Latin phrases. Is it res sua? No, it's not res sua. It's longa something. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, that's a dead language.
Yeah. I'm not trying to remember that. But in those two landscapes, Hamoud, the downside that people forget is that if a Greta Thunberg shows up to you and says, you must stop, your country must stop using oil or stop buying Russian oil. The downside is India can tell any country, but it's our oil. We paid for it.
Yeah.
It's here in our, but in our petrochemicals processing sector.
Like our trade agreement is with that one, not you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
we've got now, what are you going to do for us?
I mean, it's like you buying your phone. I mean, it's like it's like me buying my phone to, to one tech shop and the other shop is like, no, don't buy from that one because, well, they're my competitor or, well, yeah. I just don't like the way they
The way they advertise and attract more clients than me.
Now, the beautiful part of this whole technical world, I think, a lot of consumers are yet to sort of like understand how this world works, is one company. I just forgot the name of the company, whichever. Now, yeah.
I know.
So it's located in Canada. They build a lot of plane parts for big aviation companies like Boeing and Airbus.
Yeah.
Now, to build air parts, especially aeroplanes, one of the biggest aeroplane engine maker is also, well, Rolls-Royce. Mm. But, the Canadian based company, when the, Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau, woke up in one morning and scratched his head and decided, you know what, we are going to support Ukraine and then, let's terminate all trade agreements we have left off from the sanctions with Russia. And one of it is a high grade aerospace titanium.
Yeah.
Turns out there are not a lot of companies that can supply that to any aviation company.
Mm.
The thing is, VSMP Avisma is a Russian company that makes one, that makes, that, that dominates that, that industry.
Mm.
They had to give them waivers.
Yeah.
The French president on behalf of Airbus called the Canadian, the then Canadian prime minister and told them, well, here's the thing. We know we have sanctions and all this going on, but well, if we uphold that piece of, that piece of legislation and enforce it, Airbus and Boeing are going to have some giant problems.
Mm.
Now, for Airbus, I think it's, their reputation is still intact. For Boeing, they have a lot of, falling off mid-air landing gears to the point where they're trying to fix this reputation and you need high quality material.
Or cross-eyed navigation systems that actually tells you that the ground level is closer than what it actually is.
Now, yeah, that is Lion, unfortunately. You see, now.
I just had to put cross-eyed there.
now the biggest problem you have there is that, small companies in both countries, basically for the entire West, they were disadvantaged because they were not given any waivers.
Mm.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
And welcome back. So you have small business owners that need high grade titanium to to run their day to day businesses. For those guys, they were not given waivers. In other words, if you want to have access to this titanium, you are told, well, we have to support Ukraine. But if you're a big company, you are given a waiver. So yeah. It's very small. It's very anti. Upcoming businesses. When you just read beyond headlines, you begin to see that technicalities are used to justify a bunch of things.
Yeah.
I will give you one example that I think I used last week or a week or one or two weeks ago. About Trump's meeting. Trump's meeting with Putin in Alaska.
Mm.
Alaska is part of the US.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, a bunch of people went bananas before that meeting. I was like, okay, but they were criticizing South Africa when Putin was planning on coming for the BRICS summit. I like, they can actually do that. You don't like it, but they can do it. Why? Because they did not sign and ratify. I think they signed, but they ratified and then, unratified and ratified and unratified, going back to the Clinton administration.
Mm.
So how do you want to
lock up a guy, Hamoud, that you were literally bordering with? People don't know that the US and Russia have a border.
Yeah. No, not just that. The US can tell you that we don't have an obligation as per the ICC to arrest
but
him.
But they were the ones forcing under Biden for the Interpol arrest warrant.
I know.
Was it the ICC arrest warrant or the Interpol arrest
that
warrant?
That was the ICC arrest warrant. The reason why they did
were the
that,
ones forcing for it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The reason why they did that is South Africa is a member
of
and
BRICS.
They basically have a legal obligation as per the ICC to arrest anyone with an arrest warrant.
Yeah.
But they do not because they didn't sign papers without reading.
Yeah.
You gotta love technicalities. Now, all these things can be, when they say anything you do or say can be used for or against you. Mm. Oh, that's not a joke. Look, the thing is, be careful of what you sign.
Oh, Namibia is in the similar boat. I now understand, Helmut, why Namibia's international relations policy is literally, we are a friend to all and an enemy to no one, so that we don't have gray areas of, should my plane fly here or not? Yeah, South African.
The current Israeli Prime Minister has an arrest warrant similar to one that was issued by the ICC to Putin.
Yeah.
But he can get in and out of the US.
He can land in the UK.
Why?
He can land in Germany. He can land in, what's the thing's name? He can even fly to Switzerland. Because Switzerland didn't sign any of those things. The Swiss just went like, you know what, guys?
You guys form everything. We're just going to focus on the money.
Yeah, but one of your offices must be based in Geneva, no?
Yeah, exactly. One of your offices must be based in Geneva. And also, by the way, the mother of all central banks.
Mm.
Yeah, the Bank of International Settlement. Yeah, we'll have that.
Also here, no?
Yeah, also here. But the rest...
Right next to our banks that used to hold dubious gold reserves from pre-1940.
You see, that's where you're wrong. Not one that used to, no, the one that may or may not have held.
Oh, yes.
May or may not.
We don't know if the accusation actually stuck because no one can prove it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they can prove it, but no one knows if it's still there.
We have no clue what happened to that gold.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in other words, for those of us that, a point of correction, for those of you that wants to venture into career politics, you may want to read stuff before you sign. But then when, you know, if a pen is coming with an iPhone with two SIM cards, I mean, I totally understand. But
we've got to cut him some slack. He's been sitting there now for 6 years now.
Look, dude, people have to know that.
But that joke does not get old.
You know, people have to know that corruption is also creating employment for comedians. Works like a charm. That's the only employment creation that never fails. So, coming back to this reparations discussion. Now, this is a type of a joint venture that reminds you of the, of the AU, of the AU EU Joint Vision 2030 agenda.
Yeah.
So, you have two things going on here. The African Union and the European Union have a joint vision 2030 agenda to help each other in terms of development to reach their respective economic goals by 2030. And also overall African Union's agenda 2063.
Yeah.
You put that aside. I mean, it's a very good developmental relationship. Last week, I think that's...
Okay, the very comes with quotation marks.
Yeah? Oh, yeah. The very comes with quotation marks.
Yeah.
And they produced a beautiful report of how much progress is being made developmental-wise in terms of the EU-AU Joint Vision 2030 agenda.
Yeah.
And then we turn around and say, now, Caribbean, gather around. What we're going to do is the very same people that we have signed, Joint Vision 2030 developmental projects with, we are going to have to go back to them and tell them, thank you very much for all developmental plans, but all the atrocities that you committed, we need money.
We want reparations. Now, it obviously means it's ammunition, Helmut.
Now, at this point, I'm going, okay.
It's ammunition for the Namibian context. Because we've been going at it alone. We Namibia, started our process alone. Even though we also had to go through another public relations stunt back in last year, which is the Summit of the Future, Pact for the Future discussion, which made things a little bit, I don't want to say corny, but it looked weird.
I would have gone with corny.
No, it looked weird.
These speeches?
To say corny, because you would have to understand, you would have been like heavily invested in the backstory of Namibia and Germany's history with each other. Look, it would have been super corny, Helmut, if it was Namibia and South Africa standing there launching the Summit of the Future or the Pact of the Future.
Yeah.
So obviously the visualization, the optics, the public relations stunt or the public relations move was a Northern Hemisphere country and a Southern Hemisphere country. But one of the world's top 10 economies with the world's number 2 most unequal nation.
Yeah, that's us, by the way. South Africa and
Namibia.
Yeah.
Literally, guys. If you guys can, if you guys see the weird, not juxtaposition, because juxtaposition is technically a comparison exercise. Yeah. But if you see the weird, it will be a comparison nonetheless. But if you see the weird partnering up, even though the partnering has been historically there since 2006, when it obviously kicked off in earnest, or 2004, I think, and from the 90s. But just look at the relationship. Germany is now on the landscape, Helmut, where they are investing heavily in our industrialization process, and it will be a success. I will tell you today.
Yeah.
Guys, the country that invented the first car in the world, we will be industrialized through green hydrogen. We will be. And through renewable energy. We will be industrialized. The downside is just, will you still be able to say something about reparations or the joint declaration or demanding reparations? Because I was at an event back in last month in August.
Yeah.
It was another unveiling of the forensics. Those two NGOs from the UK and Germany that worked with the Nama Traditional Leaders Association and with the Ove Herero traditional authority. It's themselves where they went and positioned a exhibition of forensic photos at the National Art Gallery. Now, I went there, Hamoud, but I came a little bit late because there was tight security because the vice president was there. And the speeches were too long and I couldn't go and look at, obviously, the discussion inside the photos,
mm-hmm.
you know, the forensic photos that were hung up. And then the Monday I had Mustuk now go on the cultural tourism, you know, situation.
Ziplining down mine shafts?
across mine shaft. Okay. With that particular scenario, many of the speakers cited, and they still kept reiterating from both traditional associations or traditional organizations, they wish to be the main negotiators. In many cases, many of the speakers also expanded in a more compromising tone to say, let the other impacted groups that did not have, that did not have extermination orders issued against them. They can also come and be part of the discussion. However, there has to be a step-by-step process that has to be initiated on this. Now, I'm citing that because remember back at the start of the year, Helmut, we stepped into the realm where the vice president was once again party to the Open Society's engagements that obviously took place here in the capital. And this obviously is the theme that forms part of this, discussion that the Africa CARICOM engagement now wishes to take full earnest because they've seen what Namibia has done. They've heard what, I think it's Morocco that started a process. The vice president mentioned that Algeria also restarted a process. There's a whole cluster of countries on the continent that restarted certain processes, against, former colonial, masters. Obviously, Europe, most of them European countries.
Yeah.
Now, when you look at these scenarios, the talking point here is one about the guys that weren't in that engagement of yesterday, the summit of yesterday, are the guys that are literally doing a process themselves. They're literally doing a process themselves versus the guys that have not started a process, but now are using the African Union as said particular platform to champion this process. Like Ghana, like, I don't know if Angola started a process against Portugal, but because Angola's president João Lourenço is now the AU chair or the AU commission head, one of the two, he's chair. Because he's now chair, obviously he has to now champion an AU cause. I don't know about Ethiopia, but you were still going to tell us the funny joke, Helmut.
Oh, yeah. Oh, oh.
About what Abiy Ahmed, you know, went and said.
You see, Abiy Ahmed is, was my favorite guy in that whole speech.
Yeah.
He gave, in his speech, pointing to how, pointing to one of the, while trying to use, the recently built massive dam on the side, was that on the Blue or White Nile. Now, that dam was, to this day is still very controversial, especially with Ethiopia and I think Sudan and Egypt.
Mm.
Homboy is using that, which I found very interesting because he was going, this massive dam that we just finished constructing as Ethiopia is an excellent example of, how united we are. I'm like, dude, I don't know what you're talking about.
Hey, he should not have used those words.
Because first of all.
Because Egypt wasn't there. Sudan was not there when he made that statement.
And we know. Now, I know for sure, especially Egypt, they don't like that project.
But the Egyptians also want to build themselves? They wish to construct an irrigation project, like something like the green schemes we've got.
Yeah.
But by redirecting a portion of the Nile.
Now, look, the thing is, now, well, when it comes to, when it comes to development or more like building projects.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, I think, you know, this, you know, tit for tats are going to,
it's
going
time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people, not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Welcome back. So when it comes, when it comes to everything, project development, it's going to be, it's going to have issues of okay, we are going to have to talk, and we are not going to agree on, you know, on everything. Sometimes we are going to have disagreements, but it's, I think it's more of a sitting and talking about it. But you and I have, you know, after, you know, after doing this for a while now, you and I have learned that when it comes to when it comes to things, especially as it pertains to infrastructure, that you know, where two countries have to, you know, to sort of like talk things out.
Yeah,
it's not that easy.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it's easier said than done, because well, we still have a pending discussion over the Orange River with South Africa. And you and I more often laugh about how, well, the representatives from both countries just like to avoid that discussion. Now, let's meet on this day and talk about how we can, you know, where we can draw this border. And then the meeting happens, and then, you know, all protocol observed. By the way, we heard that you discovered oil.
And by the way, you know, our minister of, what's the guy's name from South Africa, Gwede Mantashe? He must went and made a famous statement, Hamoud, where he said, yeah, South Africa took away Namibia's just energy transition opportunity.
Huh?
Yeah, you can look up that statement.
Look,
Gwede Mantashe has something against Namibia. I don't know what we did. I think it's, I think he doesn't understand the very close relationship. Look, we've got two close relationships.
Yeah.
Obviously, the one is love-hate with South Africa.
Yeah.
The other one is...
Oh, no, all neighboring countries have that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but us in South Africa is truly love-hate.
Top-notch.
Top-notch. Top-notch love-hate. The relationship with Germany is... You know, it's like that long-lost... I was not going to make a heterosexual reference, and I was just going to... That would have taken the whole discussion... completely sideways. So it's like a, you know, it's like a fond memory, Hamoud, that you had of when you were, let's say, when you were like between the ages of 10 and 13, you know, as a young boy, you know, which is sometimes viewed as one of the best parts of your life, you know, what people think about the most, or it's between 14 and 16, they're about. You know, that, the exploration that you engage upon, you know, doesn't matter what exploration you were doing, that's open to your creativity. And then you meet that people who were friends or acquaintances or, you know, vital cogs in terms of, you know, forming the memories in your memory bank. You meet them today and you go and, you know, you have that positive reminiscing, you know, aspect. Now that's our relationship with Germany, because Namibia is still in like a honeymoon phase with Germany since 2020 for some reason. Since 2020. And we're like in this honeymoon phase of things. With South Africa, it's been completely love hate.
All throughout.
We can't live without them. We have to live with them. We don't have a choice. They are there, we are here, but we talk to each other. We sometimes call each other, you know, like you need to waste the last seconds on your super aware, on your aware.
Yeah, it's expiring.
You rather call them to waste it, to know that, you know, this is seconds I am wasting, like that speech that you and I went through specifically, which was everything just protocol observed here, protocol observed there. We recognize each other sitting across the same table, and then there's nothing for four pages. Nothing.
Yeah, the only,
and then the last two pages are just the end, and we see each other next year again, same time, same place.
There was a paragraph that at least they resembled something related to the topic, which is, we had this discussion before,
yeah,
and the documents were exchanged, but they are still with the executive branches, and we are not allowed to see them.
And we need to submit the final product or the final report to our respective heads of state.
Yeah,
and hence the reason why our respective secret services were sitting with us in the same,
uh-huh,
in the same hall. What?
Yeah.
What? But if Donald Trump signs an executive order today, I see it on the White House website today. Something that impacts the American and
you and me here.
And you and me sitting on the other side of the world in Windhoek. I can read it tonight, Helmut. Donald Trump has a whole optics, a whole public relations stunt saying, yeah, you know what, we need to rebrand the Department of Defense, which is Department Ministry of Defense, to the Department of War. And can you go read up, why is he doing this? And you realize, but the only times when they had this name was literally when they weren't the guarantees of safety of the global order, which signals a lot of signals to the world, meaning, this country, like you said, Hamoud, a little bit earlier, the UN General Assembly is probably the 80th one, is going to be shifted to Switzerland,
yep,
because of US immigration policies. So,
most of it have to do with Palestine.
Obviously that too, but do you want your president being, their diplomatic immunity being stripped away from them? And they're told, no, we need to hold you here because we legally don't recognize your country because everyone has to abide by our immigration policies that kicked in on 20 January this year.
You know, it's my favorite part.
What?
Not the United Nations General Assembly. It's the World Cup. That's gonna be fun.
Oh.
That's gonna be fun.
Hey, I, for some reason they got it right to allow all those, Brazilian and, Argentine fans and Mexican fans. There were Mexican fans too that participated in the Club World Cup competition.
Does ICE have a football team? Because they need to form one to participate, you know, just, at least there.
That's the angle you're going with, Amon.
Those guys specialize.
I'm gonna feel sorry for South Africa. South Africa stopped in their competition, in their pool, qualifying for the US next year.
Yeah.
South Africa's top in their competition, top in their pool.
Mm-hmm.
Nigeria's like number 3 or number 4 in that same pool. Now, South Africa's must now being made the literal stepchild example. You know, they are being, you know, strategic moves are being made.
Cornering
By the Americans.
Yeah.
The downside is Bafana Bafana or South Africa is going to qualify for the Football World Cup. There's like, I think, one qualifying game still left or two.
Jeez.
Or couple. No, sorry, there's a couple because we still have October that still needs to come along. There's still October rounds.
Yeah.
And South Africa would have to fly too.
Like I said, this should be fun.
Yeah, it should be fun.
Yeah. Now, the question this is going to be raising is, again, this is every time that I ask this question, I like to emphasize the fact that my question is not out of mockery or belittling. I genuinely want to know that we have different agendas here.
Yeah.
We have developmental partners who, let's just say, our partnership started off on a wrong foot, aka colonialism. Now, halfway through,
you are true. Okay.
Now,
you are right.
Now when you look at it from that angle, you can't help but think, okay, so, our friendship started off on a wrong foot. We decided to try and find the right footing. We're still trying to find that footing. developmental wise.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now, we have made a lot of agreements of all these future developmental goals, economic goals, diplomatic relations, because we have embassies and high commissions in each other's countries.
Yeah.
And also, we want the very same developmental partners to pay for all the atrocities they committed when we were operating on the wrong footing.
While we are still party to the Samoa agreement.
While we are still party to the Samoa agreement.
Yeah.
And still party to the joint AU-EU joint vision 2030, Agenda 2063. What are we smoking?
I think we're eating blue cheese, you know? Because blue cheese was, what's that lady that I watched? There's an Afrikaans program that I watched from South Africa where she says, stinkers. No, in Afrikaans, no. People are honest.
Mm-hmm.
Look, if you look at cheese.
I just want to know how we are going to pull that off. That's all.
If you look at cheese, ne, Hamoud, you will accidentally eat blue cheese if someone tells you, oh no, this is cheese. But let's, for example, say your sinus disappoints you that day and you don't smell the smell of blue cheese. Because it has a very pungent smell. Very strong smell. Very strong and pungent smell. Now, there's one lady in South Africa, she said, she works at like a, oh, you know, it's those come dine with me competitions, you know, where they have all the celebrities cooking for each other. And the lady said, you know what? Not many South Africans love eating blue cheese because of its, you know, its Afrikaans name, stinkers, because it stinks. It's a cheese that stinks. Now, if you accidentally eat blue cheese, because blue cheese goes very well with wine. Very strong red wine, specifically with red wine. The downside is the day that you smell the cheese, you will never, you won't even consider that thing, Helmut, on your enemies because the thing smells.
So even, in other words, if you want to enjoy it, don't smell it first.
Even if you eat the cheese now and you accidentally don't have red, very strong, fruity or dry red wine with you, because technically you're either supposed to eat you know, cheese with red wine, or it's red wine with meat, with red meat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I go with that, with the second combo.
Oh, it's lovely.
Oh, you
it's
have
lovely.
No idea.
It's lovely. If you don't have the red wine, and you're stuck with blue cheese and beer, you'll be put off of beer for the rest of your life because of that blue cheese. So, the safety, the particular safety concern here is, Africa has to be adamant in terms of how it's eating its plates. You know, you get invited to the party, but you're still spreading gossip about the person that invited you to the party.
Exactly.
And they know that you're spreading gossip because they're also in the same WhatsApp group that you're spreading the gossip in.
And they
know that you know that.
See, that's an excellent idea. Don't picture it as some multinational or, you know, or intergovernmental organization.
Yeah, there's no just James Bond, there's no 007 conspiracy.
So just picture it as WhatsApp groups.
Yeah.
So, we have several WhatsApp groups here.
And teenager politics, you know?
Yeah, we have three different WhatsApp groups of which both the Africa and the AU. Africa, yeah, the AU and the EU are a part of.
Yeah.
So, we met a couple of weeks ago. You know, a report a couple of weeks ago came out.
No, we know about each other.
We
grew up next to each other.
We know what we are posting. We know that we are trashing each other's names in different WhatsApp groups.
Yeah.
But we still want to be nice to each other. Man, geopolitics is complicated.
No, African geopolitics. African geopolitics.
I'm gonna take it. So we are going EU,
yeah.
You and I are homies. Nothing is gonna get between us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
we,
I'm still
development
to...
wise, we are very good.
Yeah.
And then then the Caribbean guy shows up. You know what? Then we meet with the Caribbean guys. You know what? Those guys, former colonizers, those guys must pay for what they did.
Yeah. They're not bad guys. You know?
Yeah, they're not bad.
They were bad. You know?
Now they're good.
At 1940, at 1980, they were bad.
Mm-hmm.
But now they are top notch.
They are top notch.
Top notch.
Which is why we believe.
You know that our former president will show up here, Helmut, and he'll say like, because he was a former teenage teacher himself.
Oh yeah.
He'll say, "You guys must stop using my phrase." But you know what? If he didn't patent it,
I even have a video. I need to upload that video on my social media.
The top notch.
Yeah, they were that one. With RT.
So how's the relations? Top notch.
Yeah, how's the relationship between Russia and, you know, between Russia and Namibia?
Top notch.
I'd say the relationship is top notch. Like, really, dude?
Oh, that's the best word we went, the best phrase we went with.
Uh-huh.
Top notch. Look, it's his phrase. It's not.
Then
it's
he
not
goes. Yeah. Well. In Namibia, everyone has a puna. Everyone has a
favorite phrase.
Yeah, favorite phrase. You have a verbosity. You have a thumb thucking. You have a.
Can we leave thumb thucking, Amut? Can we leave thumb thucking alone, please?
Well, he's been busy.
He might just declassify our show. Or go and get a special a gazette.
No, not really. That's that's ACC who is that petty. All he did was he called them incompetent, and then they started to show their competence by investigating him first, and then they went bananas after that. Next thing you know, Namco is caught in a crossfire, and then you have all these guys that are being investigated. I was like, hey, someone woke up a sleeping beast.
Mm.
Yeah. So now. When it comes to this whole the reparations discussion is AU's 2025 theme,
yeah,
which is brilliant. Reparations and all the and all the compensation for not just Africans on the African continent, but also those in diaspora. So all you just have to do is pick a history book, and you will come across one atrocity after another. Now one fascinating thing I only realized recently was how strong the use of the language is and how it's still dominating a large part of African history discourse to this day.
Yep.
Like the Mau Mau, the Mau Mau uprising, for example. For a large part of me knowing about that particular event, I knew it as a Mau Mau rebellion.
Mm.
It wasn't a rebellion; it was an uprising.
Yeah, because the word rebellion.
Somewhat of a negative connotation.
Was something that the British, the local Kenyan authorities, which were predominantly British run,
yeah,
they used the word rebellion.
So they were rebels.
So how are you a rebel, Hamoud, in your country?
Yeah. Well, I'm just telling you, get the heck out.
Yeah. You are literally a dissatisfied person. You're not a rebel.
It's like someone breaking into your house and then they start calling you the thief. Like, dude.
Yeah. Or they're calling you the occupier of your house. But they are the thief breaking in.
Uh-huh.
They are the burglar. Now, when you look at the scenario in terms of some of the language use sometimes. Now, it is a strategic oddity, citing this Africa CARICOM engagement, because it's literally the same two community peoples, because they obviously cite the African diaspora. They didn't go and include the Pacific Island guys because those guys were not classified as part of Africa.
Oh man.
I'm just citing this, Hamoud, so that we understand this is 2/3 of the Samoa Agreement.
Yep.
It's 2/3 of the Samoa Agreement. Now the conundrum that stems from this is obviously one of the BRICS nations, which is South Africa,
mm-hmm,
isn't saying much about this particular engagement about the AU theme. They're not. I've tried finding AU discussions. You and I, we did the Pan-African discussion, but at the Pan-African level where the South African Parliament was having a joint session with the Pan-African Parliament guys during that session that we had, the South Africans were trying to champion a South African cause. And much of the other African delegates were just sitting there going like, so you're making this about you. Because you guys were the ones that went and started a court case against Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Now Donald Trump has all what was that joke that my sister said? When someone puts up their hand for attention, then the teacher just zones in on you, special attention. Yeah. You specially dedicated attention to you. And that's specifically what South Africa did. South Africa is getting all the special attention. Everything. They're getting all the special attention. Now the downside here is South Africa is also part of the Samoa Agreement.
Yeah.
South Africa is also part of the EU,
Vision 2030.
Vision 2030. South Africa is also part of the AU Vision 2063.
Yep.
So South Africa has to understand how it wants its meals prepared. Do you run with the AU EU theme? Do you try to foster closer relations with Europe? Or do you do what Namibia has been doing, try to poke, former colonizing powers in the eye,
because much of South Africa's economy is specifically tied to the UK economy. So South Africa is a unique case with, or unique relationship with Britain. Like ours is love-hate with South Africa. South Africa's one is the literally love-hate with the British. And then their long-lost love is literally the Netherlands.
Okay, we are into David's time. So let's just wrap this up now, yeah, shall we?
Before
so
that David kicks us out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he technically wants to kick us out.
So let me get this straight. What we are doing is the African Union and the European Union have the AU-EU Joint Vision 2030 slash Agenda 2063 developmental partnership to assist each other in any economic, mostly economic and developmental ways. Mm. And the African Union, basically African countries and the Caribbean countries and the European countries have this Samoa agreement going on, mm-hmm. Of which there are, you know, mm-hmm. a bunch of them are party to. Mm-hmm. And now the European Union and the, you know, the CARI forum ministers back in 2022 launched what the EU called an ambitious new EU-Caribbean partnership under the Global Gateway Strategy.
Yeah.
So the EU and the Caribbean countries have developmental plans, mm-hmm. a developmental partnership. Africa and the EU have developmental partnership, mm-hmm. and then the AU has reparations plans or goal to sit and talk with their with their former colonial masters, aka most of which are coming out of Europe, mm. and the Caribbean wants to do the same thing. Like at this point, I'm confused beyond measure.
The Caribbeans technically just have three or four. It's just the Netherlands, France, Spain, and the UK. So they would know who their biggest grievances are geared towards.
Look, for me, the fact that we have a lot of confusing agreements.
Yeah.
Conflicting agreements.
Yeah.
And
the messaging is conflicting.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. The message is very conflicting because I'm sitting here and I just can't wait to see us, with regards to the implementation, like how the heck are we planning on pulling this off?
Yeah.
Because they are investing development wise. We want them to pay separately for the reparations. And this is the conflicting part of the messages now, I think, that is, making my head spin.
Yeah.
Look, if we pull this off, we're diplomatic geniuses. I'm just looking forward to it.
Same here.
Yeah, but we're 7 minutes into David's time. That brings us to the end of Home Run with Hamilton and Dwight. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on Eagle FM.
And on that note, dear listeners, stay tuned for the rest of our programming. Remember, we'll be back tomorrow.